Welcome to a Monday. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and joining me for the next couple of weeks while Chris Vandercook is away on vacation, Bill Sage is sitting in. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann. I'm just wondering if after what we heard on NPR's news, if I can have the strength of Ant-Man and figure out finally if we are truly alone in the universe or there's someone else. Well, immediately I can say I have the strength to say that we are not alone in the studio.
No, we're not. And we're not going to be alone in the studio because we've got you and we're here with you and guests too. And we're going to start with this first conversation. Now, a look to rehab the Navy's Red Hill fuel storage facility. The January 2014 leak of 27,000 gallons galvanized local officials and the EPA. 7 weeks ago, they announced what was termed a landmark agreement with the Navy to fix those storage tanks. But first, there would be a feasibility study, then perhaps a 20-year plan to upgrade the tanks. The agreement also includes a dispute resolution process, with the EPA getting the final say. Last week, some lawmakers issued their own letter of concern about the deal, which Senator Laura Thielen calls a huge error in judgment. Senator Thielen joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
When we talked with Jared Blumenfeld, the Region 9 head of the EPA, right after this deal came out, he said that he was not concerned about the long projected time because it was really hinging on the feasibility study, that it was going to be a case of almost, you know, they either did it or they didn't do it, no matter what the cost was. And he felt that the Navy would, in fact, do what they had to do to rehab Red Hill, because of the fact that we have Pearl Harbor. Is that the only alternative?
Well, I guess what I'd say is, first of all, it's not no matter what the cost is, because under the agreement, the type of technology that's going to be chosen to upgrade the tanks, it does depend on the cost. And so the agreement specifically states that they would use the best available practicable technology, and practicable would include whether it's too expensive. And if it is too expensive, they would have the ability to reject that and to pick a less best technology, I guess.
Well, I mean, that's sort of the point, that they either did it or they were going to have to go do something else. But in his mind, it seemed to be that something else would simply be to not have the station here in Hawaii, and that that seemed not to be practicable because we have Pearl Harbor. So the idea of having all tanks in one place, is that the only option that you see?
No, the Navy and the Pacific Command have a variety of options for storing their fuel, but storing fuel is a difficult and expensive prospect. So they are working very hard to keep the Red Hill fuel tanks because it's their largest strategic reserve of fuel in the Pacific. Now, in order to upgrade the tanks, and we'll talk about, you know, what that means in a minute, they're going to have to spend a fair amount of money. So the Navy has the choice. They could either put that money into upgrading these tanks, or they could also start to diversify their fuel storage and build new tanks in some of the other areas in the Pacific where they have it. So I think they have a variety of options in front of them.
These tanks are over 70 years old. We know that they've been leaking many times over that time period. But to have to go and bring them to current technology, which would require a double-walled tank, may or may not be what they choose to do with these tanks because they have to rehab them. Is that a safe alternative just to say that they're going to rehab them?
No, in my mind, it is not a safe alternative. So these tanks are between 72 to 75 years old. To be clear, you would never, ever, ever get permission to build these tanks the way they are today. You would have to build a double-lined tank, especially one that's over an aquifer. I don't think you would, probably even with a double-lined tank, get permission to build them today. These tanks started leaking pretty soon after they were built. They've had a history of leaks dating back to the 1940s. and apparently pretty regularly, although the Navy didn't report these to the state until in the late 80s or 90s, I think it was. The Navy is not committing in the agreement to using the best available technology to double line the tanks. So that's, to me, one of the biggest concerns. If we're going to allow enter into an agreement to allow the Navy to keep these tanks over one of our primary aquifers for the island of Oahu, then I think they should be required to use the best available technology or an equal alternative. If they come up with an alternative to double lining that is equal in safety, then I think, you know, that would be acceptable.
You mentioned the several different times that they have been leaking over the past 70 or so years and not really acknowledging that until the 80s. What about the water testing going on during that time?
I'm not sure what the water testing was going on in the early years. And from reading the record and in talking to the parties, apparently the state was not even aware of the existence of these tanks until there was a civil engineering award that came in, I think, in the 90s. And so then the state started asking questions about the tanks, and I think the Board of Water Supply as well. But there was some question about, you know, whether this was a military secret, and I think information has been, there was a history of, I guess, a lot of effort being made to get some information, and I'm not sure still whether we have full information about the maintenance records and the leakage. I have seen some documents where some of the leaks prior to the 90s in about the amount of 130,000 gallons of jet and marine diesel fuel, but that wasn't all the leakage. That was only what they had records of that they were able to share with us, and there was quite a number of other leaks from other tanks that they just had no idea how much had gone out.
So last week when you and other lawmakers were meeting with the Department of Health, and certainly discussing all of this is in light of the proposal from, or brought out by the EPA and the agreement, what happens with how we go forward when there's known leakage and they say the contaminants are making their way into the groundwater, certainly into the Navy supply of it? They don't seem to be terribly concerned about it, but should we?
I think we should, and the point people should understand is right now, we have a draft, like a settlement agreement, basically, because there was a spill of 27,000 gallons of fuel in December of 2013. And so the Navy, the US EPA, the Department of Health, and the contractor that basically manages the fuel have drafted a proposed settlement agreement. The Navy and their contractor want to sign that agreement, but the state and the US EPA have gone out for public comment, and they have to consider the public comments, and they have the option at this point to decide, do they sign the agreement as is, or do they return to negotiations and try to negotiate a better agreement that takes into consideration the public comment. So the public comment period closes today. About 18 Oahu legislators have co-signed a letter where we ask that the State Department of Health go back into negotiations and negotiate a better agreement. The Board of Water Supply is submitting a comment today. I think it's a fairly extensive one. And I believe they've gotten about 100 or 150 comments, I think they said, when we met with the military last week. I would encourage people, if they can, to submit a comment, and if they can't, to send an email to the governor, to your legislators, and to weigh in, because this is the period of time, you know, over the next couple months, where the Department of Health is going to decide, do they go with this agreement, or do they try to negotiate something better?
The point that you're making is that this is not a done deal, despite the way it in some ways has been characterized.
It is absolutely not a done deal. And the Department of Health and the US EPA should be taking into account the public comment at this period.
Meanwhile, what about the water testing? Because for people who are saying, you know, you can have all the feasibility studies you want, you can discuss this until the cows come home, but for people who are drinking the water, that's their bottom line, what they're putting in their bodies.
At this point, they have found the chemicals that are found in these fuels in the aquifer. And it has been, these chemicals have been tested at the well that the Navy uses to draw for its facility. The Board of Water Supply wells are farther away, and they pull from deeper in the aquifer. And the water testing there has not found the chemicals at the Board of Water Supply at this point. But what the Board of Water Supply is asking for is more modeling to be done to determine the flow of the groundwater. The Navy, when we met with them last week, several of the members told me, oh, the contaminants can't reach the Board of Water Supply wells. But I understand from talking to the Board of Water Supply that the Navy does have an old contract where they had modeled some of the water, and there is some ground flow in that direction. And then we also know from the work the University of Hawaii has been doing is that as the sea levels are rising, that our groundwater supply is going to start to be compressed because our freshwater sits on top of the saltwater. And as that saltwater rises under the ocean, you know, the UH is already showing in places like Waikiki, other areas during high tides, you know, the ocean's coming up farther. We don't know how that's going to affect the flow of the groundwater from places like under the Red Hill. So we need, in order to know the long-term protection of our water supply, have more monitoring wells done, have more modeling done to determine the flow of that underground water. But to me, the biggest thing is, you know, you can model and test all you want, but once that water is contaminated, it's contaminated. So the key thing is, what do you do with those tanks to make sure they stop leaking? Because we can't afford to have more go into the aquifer, because once it's contaminated, these chemicals stick around for generations.
When we talked to the Department of Health last year, one of the things that they said is that similar to what you just said a moment ago, that you know the original thought was that this is not going to migrate into the Board of Water Supply wells. But the fact that we don't know and that there are real unknowns, do you think that the Department of Health was being complacent?
You know, I think they made an error in judgment about the depth of concern and appreciation people have for the aquifer. A lot of time, when you read through these agreements and when you talk to the Department of Health, a lot of concern is stated about the cost for the military of having to find alternative fuel supplies. But what I didn't see anywhere is what's the cost to the residents of the island of Oahu if we don't have that aquifer? I think it's much bigger. And so we need to start to take that, you know, and give it equal consideration or greater consideration when we go back to the bargaining table.
The comment period, as you mentioned, closes today.
Yes.
But there is still some time for people to get their comments in. But after that point, for some people, that's not going to be a possibility to say anything. So after that point, what can someone do?
I think, again, the more people who express their concern, both in individual conversations as well as publicly, the more strength the Department of Health will feel and the governor would feel in going back to the bargaining table. It's difficult to bargain with the Navy. I mean, they're pretty big. And so I think they need to understand that they have a lot of backing from the residents of Oahu. I know it sounds silly, but letters to the editor, calls into radio shows, calls to your legislature, calls to the governor, those kinds of things, emails, they make a lot of difference, because when we see as policymakers that there is a depth of concern out there, then we pay more attention to the issue.
You're really saying make it an issue.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us about it this morning.
Sure.
Thanks for the time. Senator Laura Thielen represents the 25th Senatorial District, Kailua to Portluck. She is a former chair of the Department of Land and Natural Resources.